They overwhelm you with their work. They overwhelm you with pressure.
Shoot, they score!
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We had Patrick Crosby score!
Give them 20 minutes of room where they can make you bleed for it.
If he doesn't sign with Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks, no player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien pulls it in!
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
He strides up towards center ice and slaps it back in. 12:35 remaining, third period. Send it out in front of shot, they score. A dump in, came toward the side of the net, and it's 3-1, Dallas.
And with that goal by Jets killer Tyler Seguin, the Dallas Stars went on to win last night by a 3-2 margin over your hometown Winnipeg Jets. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at tsn1290.ca, we welcome you to the season debut of NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Ezra Ginsberg. And we're pleased to welcome to the program. He's going to be joining us throughout the Winnipeg Jets season. You've heard him here on TSN 1290. Sean Assor. Sean, good evening. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to NHL This Week.
Guys, pleasure to be here. Excited. Looking forward to our time together, and I'll start things off with a little token of my appreciation. I never like to come to a party empty-handed.
Oh boy.
So as a sincere thank you from me to you guys, what better way to start off a party than with a pot of gold?
Wow, he brought us chocolate, so he knows the secret to our heart is through our stomachs. I've never seen Ezzy quite as happy as he was when that pot of gold came out from underneath the desk here at TSN 1290.
It's so funny. When Sean said that he brought something just now, I was just thinking, please be food. Please be food. I'm so hungry. So that's amazing. We'll probably have those finished by the midway point of the show.
Yeah, I think without a doubt those chocolates aren't going to last very long. We are with you until 8 p.m. tonight as we'll talk about the Winnipeg Jets and we'll talk about the NHL. Joining us on the program in 30 minutes' time, Dallas Stars broadcaster Daryl Razor Ray joins us. Talk about the rematch tomorrow between the Jets and the Stars. At the top of the second hour, Dallas Stars general manager Jim Nill is going to join us. We'll talk to Jim about his Dallas Stars team, talk to him about how expectations of that Stars team have changed since they won the Central Division last season. And in the bottom of the next hour, Drew Spivak, who covers the Colorado Avalanche, is going to join us as he is now opening the chocolates and is like a kid in a candy store, as the expression goes. Gentlemen, last night the Dallas Stars end up defeating the Winnipeg Jets by a 3-2 margin. Obviously not the result that the Winnipeg Jets were hoping for as they embarked on that one-game road trip, the first of a home-and-home with the Stars. But would you disagree with me when I say that it was the Jets' best performance of this young NHL season?
Yeah, Drew, it's obviously only been six games here, and the Jets only have two wins. But I would agree with that, and I would say at the very least it was one of their best performances so far this year. I would say the Boston game for me was one of the more impressive performances. And if you remember, the Jets were defeated by the Boston Bruins 4-1. I don't think the score was very indicative of the way the play was on the ice. But certainly the Jets generated a lot of offense, guys. Alexander Burmistrov had that breakaway, and he was unable to beat Antti Niemi. Sean Mathias had a couple of good chances there in the first period. Tobias Enstrom had a good chance in the third period. Dustin Byfuglien hit a crossbar late in the third period. So the Winnipeg Jets generated a lot of offense. Let's be honest, Antti Niemi was very good yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Deserved to get one of the three stars. I don't know if he got the first star. I forget exactly which one it was. But certainly he was the best player for the Dallas Stars yesterday. And you had a lot of positives. You had Joel Armia scoring the goal that put the Jets on the board. He had a really strong game on that third line with Adam Lowry and Sean Mathias. But at the end of the day, guys, I mean, how many times can you say, you know, we didn't get the 2 points, but we generated a lot of offense, right? And it's only six games here, Drew, but you've got two games coming up back-to-back against Dallas and Colorado in your own division.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jets can't afford to leave any more points on the board. You don't want to say in Game 7 that it's a must-win situation, but really, you have to get at least 2 points in the next four games. I think ideally, in the next two games, and ideally you want to get 4 points in the next two games because you've started off the season so poorly. The Jets haven't been good defensively. We saw that, you know, in the Heritage Classic. You know, Dustin Byfuglien made a bit of a mistake there on the first goal, and Patrick Laine gave up the puck to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, which led to another Oilers goal. So, you know, there are a lot of positives to take. The Jets, you know, scored a power play goal, and they had a lot of good, high-quality scoring chances. But, you know, you don't get any points against a division rival, and that's really all that matters to me.
I think that's a good point from you, Ezzie, is that you're right. We know that 2 years ago when the Jets made the playoffs, their record in division was very good. Last year, obviously a disappointing season, their record in division was quite poor. So far this year, they've lost their first two games in division. Now they have a back-to-back Thursday-Friday against the Dallas Stars and the Colorado Avalanche, two division rivals. All of a sudden, if you lose both of these games, or if you split, you're 1-3 or you're 0-4, and you've put yourself even further behind the eight ball. You know, it doesn't take long, Sean. It doesn't take long for it's early to become it's slipping away. And, you know, you are only six games in, but before you know it, after Friday, you're eight games in, and if you've lost your first four in division, you now have to play catch-up.
Yeah, absolutely, and some bad situations got worse for the Jets yesterday. They lost Drew Stafford to injury, so like we were talking about here, a really, really important stretch of games within the Central, and now no Brian Little, no Drew Stafford, so a call-up will have to be made, so some more inexperience getting inserted into the Jets lineup down this important stretch, and it's going to be really interesting to see who the Jets call up in an important little stretch here as we approach, I guess, the is-it-too-early portion of the season.
Well, let's talk about that, let's talk about who the call-up will likely be for Drew Stafford. I mean, they don't automatically have to insert somebody into the lineup for Thursday night in against Dallas, because they could go with the same 12 that they started with, assuming Kyle Connor gets back into the lineup, and then you have somebody else to sit in the press box. But if you're Paul Maurice, if you're the Jets brain trust, who is the first call-up that you're targeting from the Manitoba Moose to come and replace Drew Stafford, or at least sit in the press box for at least one or a couple games?
Yeah, Drew, and that's the $64,000 question these days, right? And you guys have to remember that the Jets haven't called anybody up since Brian Little went down with an injury on opening night. So right now the Jets are down two forwards who are usually in their top six, maybe, you know, with the exception of Stafford, who sometimes plays on the third line. Certainly Little has been their number one center for many years now, and more so their second line center now. But Drew, I would expect it to be one of Marco Dano or Andrew Kopp, and I guess Jack Roslovic would maybe be one of my, you know, sleeper picks, if you want to say that. I don't know if they want to bring up another rookie forward when you already have two rookie forwards in your top nine. So I would expect it probably, if I'm going between Andrew Kopp and Marco Dano, I'm probably picking Marco Dano because he's a winger, and Andrew Kopp has been a center at the NHL level and at the college level. But certainly I would expect Kyle Connor to get back into the lineup tomorrow night, and Chris Thorburn I would expect to stay in the lineup Thursday night and probably even Friday. And then I would expect that extra forward just to go on the road trip to Colorado to be there in case there is, God forbid, another injury. But certainly it's a tough situation for the Jets guys. But, you know, look at the Dallas Stars playing without Jason Spezza, playing without Cody Eakin, playing without Patrick Sharp, playing without Yuri Hudler. They have injuries too, so the Jets are going to have to deal with this. They've dealt with it in the past, and it certainly isn't a reason why they can't win hockey games here.
No, you certainly can't use your injuries as an excuse, because we do remember, of course, that the season the Jets had their most success, they were riddled with injuries on the back end. So once you saw them succeed in those difficult situations 2 years ago, injuries are every team suffers injuries, and they're not a viable excuse in this day and age in the NHL. It's just a way of life that you have to deal with these injuries. You know, we've talked about the absence of Brian Little, but I really do think that it maybe isn't getting enough attention, just how much the Jets seem to be missing Brian Little and how it affects their center depth and the performance of maybe their second and third line. You know, the first line is still going okay with Scheifele and with, you know, Wheeler and with Laine or whatever, you know, whatever combination they use. But just doesn't seem to be, the absence of Brian Little really does seem to be impacting that second and third line for a team that expected to get more scoring from their bottom two or bottom three lines than they did in previous years.
Yeah, Brian Little's a lot muckier than people give him credit for, too. He does a lot of work down low. Paul Maurice...
That's a technical term, mucky?
Yeah.
It's in the dictionary there.
Well, no, it was raining today in Winnipeg, so he's got a lot of mud on him.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah, raking was not fun this afternoon. But, yeah, he does a lot of the hard work that a lot of people overlook, especially down low in his own zone in the corners. He can do a great job of puck retrieval. Gets it up to his wingers quickly, and then they can exit the zone. I've noticed with Brian Little, more so than anything, the possession numbers go down because his face-off effect, the effect he has in the face-off circle, is so important, especially when you're on offense, so that you can keep the puck in the offensive zone rather than have to shift to defense quickly with a young squad, and then you got to be thinking much faster than your hands can move and your feet can move.
Yeah, and it's a really good point that Sean makes there, Drew, because Brian Little has been not only their number one center, but their best face-off guy. And if you look at last night's stats, Adam Lowry was the best Jet in the face-off circle at 70%. But then you look at Mark Scheifele, and he was at 35%. Mm-hmm. He was beat a lot on the draw, so that was a problem last night. But yeah, you know, Sean, I agree with you. Brian Little, you know, he's a little bit underrated, in my opinion. He's taken a lot of, criticism for the fact maybe over the years that he isn't a bona fide number one center, maybe not producing those offensive totals like number one centers on other teams. But certainly he's a great two-way player, and he's a veteran. With all these young players in the lineup, Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor, Nikolai Ehlers, you know, Josh Morrissey, I mean, the Jets are a very young team, as we all know, and having a veteran like Brian Little in these situations where the team is struggling, I think, is very important. So, you know, the Jets are going to have to pick up the slack for no Drew Stafford and no Brian Little, but certainly, you know, the Jets, you know, showed us a lot of promising signs, generating a lot of scoring chances. I thought they were, you know, especially that third line of Lowry, Armia, and Mathias was a physical line. Mm-hmm. You know, the Jets, you know, we haven't talked a lot about that, Drew. Certainly leading up to the season, you know, the Jets, that year that they went to the playoffs, they were a very physical team, and they've lost that a little bit.
I think they lost that. I mean, it's a different group of players because Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian were on that team for a lot of that year, and they were two of the more physical Jets forward and defensemen, as the case may be. It's not as physical of a league as it was 2 years ago. So I don't think that it's tremendously surprising that the Jets aren't as physical. And you hear it oftentimes in national broadcasts that, you know, for people who don't follow the Jets closely, that they still think they're this physical, rough and tumble team. They haven't been that for a couple of years, and they haven't. That's a deliberate decision that they've gone with speed and skill and less physicality, because they figure, you know, I agree with them. I'd rather take a team that is skilled than a team that is physical and has to work hard to generate their chances, as opposed to a team that can generate chances just by being so skilled.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I still think, though, it's a huge part of the game. And I think that even though the Jets have players that can mix it up, whether it's an Adam Lowry or even Joel Armia, I think, you know, is underappreciated for the physical style that he plays. Even a Brandon Tanev, who is playing in his first year for the Jets this year, first full year for the Jets, is a guy that can mix it up. Chris Thorburn's another guy. But I certainly think that the Winnipeg Jets are going to have to make sure that they aren't pushed around. I thought they were pushed around a little bit in Dallas yesterday, to be honest.
Well, the rematch goes tomorrow evening here at MTS Center in Winnipeg, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN 1290, your home of the Winnipeg Jets. Let's head to break. When we return, we look at the goaltending situation throughout the league.
And we're going to have some chocolates.
And you're going to have some chocolates, too. So stay tuned. Much more to come. It's the season debut of NHL This Week, live on TSN 1290.
Solani right down the middle, quick shot, scores! Wheeler trying to go back to the line, deflected away. Bufflin misplayed it, Letestu shorthanded. In on Hellebuck, and he scores! Mark Letestu with his second shorthanded goal of the season, and his second goal of the season.
Some highlights from the Heritage Classic weekend, which of course ended in Winnipeg. A great time had by all who attended the events at IG Field. The game's a little bit secondary to the party, but certainly a good time was had. As you're in the crowd. Not only were you in the crowd, if I may throw you under the bus.
I ran into you in the in the crowd.
So I left. I was in the press box, and I left the game, and I'm walking to the bus because I took the, I live on a convenient
rapid. Right. We took the bus together.
Yeah, it goes to show you that he already forgot.
I saved you a spot. Remember the guy wasn't going to leave that spot, and I saved it for
as
you.
As he did pull a power play.
Chivalrous.
Yes, he's quite chivalrous.
Not dead.
So anyways, I get on the bus, and I'm sitting with Ezzy, and I know that Ezzy and his lady friend Naomi live literally 3 blocks from me, like right around the corner. So we're getting off, I assume, at the same spot.
By the way, isn't that the reason that you're going to actually be moving?
No, it's why I'm just, I have a security guard outside my house at all times is why that is. So we get to our bus stop and I say, okay, this is our stop. Let's go. Ezzy and Naomi, they stay on the bus for a while longer for no very good reason whatsoever. You went to the next stop, which was nowhere close to your house.
Well, first of all, there was a little bit of wobbly pops involved, so we probably weren't thinking clearly, unfortunately.
I can confirm.
We actually thought that the bus was going to turn around and go back towards Osborne Village. Unfortunately, it didn't. So, we had a little bit of a walk.
Yeah. So, after the show, I'll show you how a map works, and you can see how the rapid transit routes in Winnipeg are laid out, because the bus doesn't just fly off of the rapid transit station and land on the streets to start going through Osborne Village.
By the way, on the topic of the Heritage Classic, my highlight of the Heritage Classic was obviously the entire weekend leading up to the games and all of that. But one of the funniest things was during that delay at probably around 2:30, 2:45, I went to go get a beer at one of the beer vendors, and they had actually sold out of beer. I tweeted it, and a few people thought I was joking, but no, they actually ran out of beer. Not at the Rum Hut, which I kind of was joking about, but they actually did run out of beer at one of the vendors, and I can say that I wasn't solely responsible for that, but
Mazel tov.
That was how big of a party it was. It was an unbelievable weekend. The Jets might not have won the game on Sunday, but they won the alumni game, and kudos to the entire city of Winnipeg and everybody who was involved with organizing it and everyone who was at that game, because it was an unbelievable event, Drew, and it showcased the city very nicely.
It was a great time, and sort of glad to some extent that it's now over and we can get into focusing really on the current NHL season, because we all knew that this hoopla was still about to occur. So the first sort of 4 or 5 games of the Jets season were a little bit maybe not unfocused, but just sort of a little distracted. So now we are into the nitty-gritty part of the Jets season. I should mention this segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit Linden Market Dental Center.
Drew, when the Tampa Bay Lightning are in town,
Bishop
is maybe going to have to go see Dr. Les Rikus after he lost a couple of chiclets.
Yeah, you don't often see a goalie lose teeth.
No.
But that was a pretty hard shot he took right in the old face mask there, and lost a couple teeth as a result. But he'll take it, given that the Lightning had that absolute dominant victory over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Steven Stamkos apparently getting booed at the Air Canada Center. I'm not sure he deserves that, but fans can, I guess, do what they want for their money at that point in time. And of course, he had the last laugh with that convincing victory last night for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Let's look at the goaltending situation for a number of teams throughout the NHL, because here we are, 2 weeks into the NHL season. There are 3 teams who have serious goaltending issues. And I'm not talking about performance. I'm talking about injuries. Start with the LA Kings, who've lost both Jonathan Quick, and they lost Jonathan Quick for 3-4 months, apparently, as he had groin surgery.
He did have surgery.
Yes, he did have groin surgery. And then they lost his backup, Jeff Zatkoff, who got injured in practice, and are now going with a tandem of Peter Budaj and Jack Campbell. Jack Campbell, of course, a former member of the Dallas Stars. And apparently they've signed Anders Lindback to a PTO. So the Kings, serious goaltending issues with Budaj, Campbell, and Lindback, none of whom are considered starting NHL goalies at this stage in their career.
Right, and Anders Lindback has already been assigned to the Ontario Reign
right.
of the AHL. So Anders Lindback is not the answer there. I know right off the bat, I wouldn't expect, right now at least, I wouldn't expect Andre Pavlik to be traded to the LA Kings. I know there are a lot of people out there. We actually talked about it a couple of weeks ago on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the Saturday show, about, you know, maybe Andre Pavlik possibly being dealt to the LA Kings, but the Jets were going to have to eat up at least half of that salary, Drew. But certainly when you look at the LA Kings, they won last night, by the way. Peter Budaj got the win. Mm-hmm. But certainly, I mean, they must be nervous there in LA with Peter Budaj and Jack Campbell. As you know, Drew, Jonathan Quick is a top goaltender in the NHL. He had 40 wins last year. You know, he struggled a little bit at the World Cup of Hockey and didn't have the results that he wanted. But certainly this injury, and we said this on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Jonathan Quick being injured for the LA Kings is the same thing as Carey Price going down last year for the Montreal Canadiens. And sure, they have a good defense there. And, you know, Jeff Zatkoff, you know, it's unfortunate that he wasn't able to take advantage and play some more games. But certainly, I wouldn't be surprised if the LA Kings are still looking to make another move here. Anders Lindback isn't going to make up for Jonathan Quick's absence. He's going to be out for at least half of the season here, Drew. So, yes, the LA Kings are in big trouble here. You know, they've gotten off to an okay start considering that Jonathan Quick is out of the lineup. But, again, I think they're still in the market for another goalie.
Yeah, I think right now that they're implying that mentality, kind of keep the head above water, and once we submerge, we'll kind of see what happens. But, you know, it's a shame. Jeff Zadkoff could have came in, maybe, you know, cemented himself as something more than a career backup, but then he gets hurt, so we enter former, was it Manitoba Moose goaltender?
I guess property of the Winnipeg Jets, yeah, Peter Budaj. I'll be it briefly.
Yeah. And I think right now, more so than anything, I think they're just hoping in L.A. that they can, you know, win more than they lose.
Yeah, but the problem with that strategy, and I agree with you.
It's not a good strategy by any means.
First of all, Zatkoff, with all due respect to Jeff Zatkoff, has never proven that he can carry a ball and run with it for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had that one sort of little bit of a Hollywood game at the start of the playoffs last year for the Penguins when he had to start game one of round one against the Rangers, if I recall correctly. But Zatkoff has never proven to be anything but a middling NHL backup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when he's healthy, and he's going to be healthier before Jonathan Quick is, so even if he's back in 3 weeks, it's hard to believe that he's going to be the answer to bridge the gap from, you know, from the time he's back healthy to the time that Jonathan Quick's back, which, like you said, is 3-4 months from now, which is, it's an incredible loss. It's losing, it's like, you know, one of the best, it's exactly right, Izzy. It's like Carey Price getting hurt last year for the Montreal Canadiens. It can derail your entire season.
Well, I know, and to Sean's point, I do agree with Sean. I mean, right now you're just trying to stop the bleeding, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're certainly worried that, you know, the goaltending tandem that they have. Peter Budaj's never been a number one goaltender in the NHL. Jack Campbell certainly hasn't. He was a top draft pick. I forget exactly what he was. I want to say late first rounder Jack Campbell or early second rounder. But when you look at the schedule coming up, sure, they beat Columbus last night in overtime, but they've got Nashville coming up tomorrow at home, and then you've got St. Louis and Chicago back-to-back on the weekend, guys. And, you know, it's too early in the season to say that the LA Kings are you know, out of the playoff picture, but certainly they have to figure out, are they going to go with Peter Budaj and Jack Campbell and Jeff Zadkoff, that three-headed monster, or are they going to go out and acquire a goalie? And it's
a literal three-headed monster for LA Kings fans.
Well, when you're talking about, you know, Jonathan Quick's injury, Drew, I mean, he's going to be out half of the season, and he makes a lot of money. I think he makes in the neighborhood of $6 million a year. It might be $7 million a year. So you're not going to trade for a goaltender who you're going to have to pay $3 or $4 million because the LA Kings right now have salary cap problems, mm-hmm. right? So that's why Andre Pavlik doesn't make sense. I know Michael Neuwirth is another guy whose name has been thrown out there. He struggled
Steve
early
Mason's
on.
Steve Mason's name is actually also mm-hmm. been
but
the
also
one that
he makes, I think, $3.5 million. So
I think closer, over $4 million is what he makes.
There you go.
Quick makes $5.8 million. So you're right. That's a big ticket to have on IR, but it does free up some cap space for the LA Kings at the very least. And Jack Campbell, you mentioned him. He was a former 11th overall pick of the Dallas Stars.
Higher than I
back
thought.
In 2010, and he obviously never materialized to be. The Stars thought he was going to be their goaltender of the future. Never came to fruition there. So, the LA Kings are in a difficult position. You've heard the name Andre Pavlik. You've heard the name Red O'Bara, who's currently with Florida's AHL franchise in San Antonio, if I recall correctly.
Did you see him play last year?
He wasn't very good. Mike Condon, who was the third-string goalie in Pittsburgh when Matt Murray was injured. Now, Murray's back healthy, so he's considered an option, but he wasn't very good for the Montreal Canadiens last year. So you have a lot of decidedly average to below-average goaltenders available, and you have a lot of teams that would be in the market for one. The Kings, we know the Arizona Coyotes lost Mike Smith, and they can't possibly run with a combination of Louis Domingue and Justin Peters, because that's really bad. And then we know the Boston Bruins now are without both Tuukka Rask and Anton Khudobin. Not as long of an absence for Rask. He's day-to-day. Khudobin out for 3 weeks. So I think there is a bit of a arms race that should be developing between the Coyotes and the Kings in order to get a serviceable goaltender, because what they currently have just isn't going to cut it.
Yeah, and I think that's why, guys, Mike Babcock the other day was telling, you know, the assembled media, Ken Campbell of the Hockey News specifically, just to relax a little bit as it relates to Freddie Anderson's play. Because if you look around the NHL, well, if you looked at to Cam Ward and Eddie Lack's numbers, I mean, their save percentage and goals against is just atrocious. I think their save percentage is just above 800 there in Carolina. So Carolina's got goaltending issues as well. Toronto has goaltending issues. We already talked about L.A. and Arizona. There are a lot of teams right now that are struggling with their goaltenders. Look at the Winnipeg Jets. Connor Hellebuck and Michael Hutchinson, guys, sure, haven't exactly lit it up for the Jets so far.
But they're not in the market. It's too early to start looking to replace one of those guys because they're both healthy, struggling performance-wise, but healthy, whereas the Kings' goaltenders are just injured. And same with the Coyotes with Mike Smith. Quickly,
yeah,
Sean?
Yeah, and just touching on the LA Kings, I just wanted to get one point out before we head to break here. But just what it does for a team when you have an elite goaltender in net and you base your game plan and your mentality entering that game around that, from defense to forwards to everything, to coaching, to tactics. When that goaltender is removed from the equation, you have to readjust your entire approach to each and every game. Going, like I said, from defense to puck retrieval to exits to where shots are coming in from your opposition. I mean, for talent alone, like forget the talent alone, how the forwards and the defense play with respect to who's in net changes wholeheartedly once you remove an elite goaltender from your crease.
Right, and no offense to Peter Budaj, but when you have Jonathan Quick back there, who's won two Stanley Cups, and you know that he's going to stop, you know, 93% of the shots every night, you don't have as much to worry about. So I think, you know, we've talked about several teams that are having goaltending issues, but with Jonathan Quick out 3 to 4 months, I think the LA Kings are probably the most nervous team in the league right now.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Daryl Ray, the Dallas Stars play-by-play broadcaster. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Shortly past the bottom of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Sean Assor with you here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Dallas Stars broadcaster Daryl Ray. Daryl, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Daryl. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Dallas Stars in the midst of this home-and-home series between the Jets and the Stars. So let's look back at last night's game. We'll start there before we look at the Stars in general. What did you think about last night's game? I thought it was a decent battle between two Central Division rivals that especially got a little bit heated there at the end of the contest.
Yeah, it actually got heated before the contest in warm-up when there was a little bit of trading paint. I think Roussel and Shifley and Thorburn and Ben, you don't see that very often nowadays in the NHL. It used to be an everyday occurrence in junior hockey. When I was playing out in Kamloops, I can remember our tough guys patrolling the center line and trying to establish some boundaries early on. And I don't know what prompted it last night, but it got a little chippy even before they dropped the puck to begin the game. And then the game itself was one of the more entertaining games that we've witnessed so far this year. I know it's early, but, you know, two teams that are okay, I guess, trading some chances, which makes for really entertaining hockey. And there's always a physical component to the Stars and the Jets when they get together, and that takes it up a notch too. So it was a good game from a broadcast standpoint, and it sounded from the comments after the game that both Paul Maurice and obviously Lindy Ruff liked the way their teams played. So it sets up for what should be a terrific rematch tomorrow night.
Darryl, Patrick Eves' second goal there, the Jets challenged it and lost their timeout. As far as you're concerned, it was the right call made on the ice?
Oh, I think so, yeah. I'll be honest with you, though. I look at every one of these goalie interference calls, and when you read through Rule 69 in the rule book, you can find reason for everything to either not be counted or counted. There's such a big gray area. And in that instance, it went both ways. Yeah, there was a shove. Did that shove cause the goal to be scored? At the same time, Klingberg's stick was being held by Morrissey, and then he hopped out of the way. So, the league wants goals, and the Stars had one against the Los Angeles Kings in overtime that Lindy Ruff and a few others went nuts on, that they thought there was goalie interference, and it got let go. So over the course of 82 games, I think it all evens up.
Darryl, 7 of the 8 games, including last night versus teams against the Central Division for the Stars, how much more pressure is put on a team that's not only recovering from injury like the Stars are, but now have quite a few Central Division showdowns up ahead in their schedule?
Yeah, they've put a real premium on these games. You can even go back to when Dave Tippett was coaching the Stars, and that was one of the things they talked about ad nauseum at the beginning of the season, was your record against your own division can make or break your season, whether you're a playoff team or not. And I probably don't need to remind Jets fans that, because, their rancid performance within the division last year, I think they finished with 11 wins. If you look at the end of the schedule, that probably cost them a spot in the postseason. And you could say the same thing about the Stars a couple of years ago. They only won 8 divisional games and missed the playoffs. So it doesn't matter when they come. It's imperative that you at least keep your head above water. Last year, the Stars stormed through it. The Stars and the St. Louis Blues had the best divisional records in the league, and a big reason why they won the division and won the West as far as points in the regular season. So these matter, and this will matter big time here tomorrow night. And the fact that they played this one divisional team 3 times in a 2-week span, and then they'll sprinkle in some of the other clubs along with it.
Darryl Ray is our guest on the NHL This Week. He's the Dallas Stars broadcaster. Darryl, we're going to have Jim Neal on in about 20 minutes or so, and we're going to ask him this. So I'll start with asking you this question. How have expectations, both internally and externally, changed for this Dallas Stars team coming off of the Central Division Championship last season?
That's a very good question. I think it's ratcheted up. There was major disappointment with the way things ended last year. I mean, they basically barfed on themselves in Game 7 at home against St. Louis. And that sort of had to fester for 5 months before they started playing hockey again. And now they've run into a rash of injuries. But I suspect heading into the season, everybody involved with the Stars was thinking, okay, this is the year we take another step. But you have to, you got to go through all the steps in order to get yourself back into the postseason, and I'm not saying they've lost track of that. The injuries have been debilitating, there's no question. I don't think I've ever been involved with a team where one position gets hit all the time and so heavily. Like, this isn't spread between defensemen and forwards. Mm-hmm. It's just forwards, and it's just the elite forwards. And, they had almost 120 goals out of their lineup last night with the missing. So I think if you looked at it and you said, if they have everything in place, if they get good goaltending, which I know everyone wants to talk about and is a bit of a variable, but if they get that, They know they're going to be able to score goals. They've rejigged their defense core a little bit and moved in some young guys. And if they show that they are ready for prime time, then I don't know that there's a team that's better than this club in the Western Conference. And that's certainly the way they view themselves heading into the season.
Daryl, you just mentioned some of the injuries that the Stars are experiencing right now. Six regulars out of the lineup. We know that Matthias Janmark isn't going to be coming back anytime soon. Lindy Ruff spoke to the media today and said that Jason Spezza, Yuri Hudler, and Patrick Sharp aren't going to be in the lineup tomorrow night versus the Jets, but it looks like Jason Spezza and Yuri Hudler are more short-term, but Patrick Sharp is dealing with that concussion. Is there any concern within the Stars organization that this might keep Sharp out of the lineup for a prolonged period of time?
Oh, there always is with a concussion. And, you know, the last thing on earth anybody wants to do is rush back. And it's just got to, you know, take its course. He's an important guy. They slapped an A on him as an alternate captain before the season this year. Not that he needs that. He's a multiple Stanley Cup winner, brings all that experience and leadership and his ability to play from Chicago to Dallas, and it paid dividends immediately. And he's missed. It's an opportunity for some other young guys, but he has missed. Hudler and Spezza are on the trip, but again, you know, Yuri Hudler hasn't done anything for almost 2 weeks now with the flu, and Spezza hasn't been skating, so it's highly doubtful they'll be in the lineup tomorrow night, but they'll get back sooner, much sooner than Sharp. And the other guy you mentioned, Matthias Janmark, is another one that, you know, he's essentially gone for the season, and he was a real important one of those multitaskers that you can, you know, you can mix and match with other guys. Very smart player, very good defensively, and that kind of rocked their world in training camp. And on top of that, the Winnipeg native, Cody Eakin, has a knee injury the second day of training camp, or the first day of training camp, and has knee surgery, and he's gone for, you know, 6 weeks to 2 months. So it has been a very trying start to the season for the Stars, for their coaching staff, because of all these forwards that have been out and how they've had to try to cobble the lineup together and compete when a lot of guys haven't played together.
Daryl, I want to look at the blue line for a second, maybe shift to some players actually on the ice for a little bit of a chat. You know, so much focus gets thrown towards John Klingberg and what an absolute phenom he is to watch. But yesterday I was watching that game, and Esa Lindell actually really stood out to me just as, you know, a sturdy young defenseman. You know, he's 6'3", 215, he's 22 years old. You can't really ask for a much better frame for a defenseman. You know, just maybe can you give me some quick thoughts on just what you've seen from him so far?
Yeah, he didn't have the best experience, I don't think, at the World Cup, certainly the way it ended. Although, you know, for a guy that wasn't even playing in the NHL to be named to the preliminary roster for Finland was a major feather in his cap. And Jari Lehtinen, the former Dallas Star, was the GM of that team, and he took him to the World Championships last year. It raised some eyes, I think, over in Finland. That they were grabbing this guy that was in the minors, not in the NHL. But he saw what he saw in him, and I think your view of him watching him last night is the same thing. He's, you know, he's got size, he moves the puck really well, he's smart, he can read situations. He just needs a little bit of experience at this level. Last year was his first year in North America and played well in the American Hockey League, really well. Got a little cup of coffee with the Stars, played four games. He looked like he wasn't quite ready for that, and this year, you know, they're mixing and matching, trying to find a winning combination with their group of eight defensemen back there again, and only six can suit up. So if you get in there, whether you're young or old, you want to stay in there. And last night's performance gets them another one, I would suspect, tomorrow night against the Jets.
Daryl, got a couple more questions for you. Sticking on the back end, we thought the acquisition was going to happen at the trade deadline last season. It didn't. It ended up happening on July 1st. That was when the Stars acquired Dan Hamhuis as an unrestricted free agent. How important has his addition been as a veteran influence on what is, other than Hamhuis and Johnny Oduya, a relatively young Stars back end?
Yeah, you nailed it. Those two individuals are sort of the big toes, if you will, of a pretty young defense corps. And Dan's got so much experience, not unlike a bunch of the other veteran guys that have come into Dallas, there's an adjustment period. You know, they play a little bit differently, it seems like, than most other stops on the circuit. And it takes a little bit to get used to, I think, more than anything, how aggressive Lindy Ruff wants his defenseman to be. And there's a lot of read and react out of that. You know, he's won gold with Canada. He went to the Stanley Cup final with the Canucks. You know, he essentially replaces Alex Goligoski in his spot. And he's been a winner a lot. So he's a real good addition to this group. I think he's still trying to get fully comfortable after spending, you know, 6 years in Nashville, 6 years in Vancouver, and now he's got a brand new thing to learn about. But they finally got their man. They were like Mounties. They stayed on him. They didn't get him at the deadline, but they got him in the summer.
Darryl, we'll let you go on this last question. Now, typically, and for many years, you've been the Stars' color analyst. Thus far this year, you've actually shifted into the play-by-play role, taking over from Dave Strader, who, of course, is in the midst of a battle with cancer, and we extend our thoughts and our prayers and that of the entire hockey world to Dave as he goes through his battle. Just a word about, you know, what it's been like to work with Dave Strader and, you know, how watching him has helped you prepare for this unfortunate opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you use the perfect word. It's just unfortunate. You know, and people ask me all the time, how are you liking it? And I don't even really know how to answer that because I do enjoy it. It's a completely different skill set. But at the same time, I'm only doing this because of my partner's misfortune. And we had a wonderful celebration for him with Hockey Fights Cancer at the home game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And, you know, Dave came in and immediately, you know, he did like 15, 20 games, and it felt like he'd been there for 15 or 20 years. And it's such an easy guy to work with and be around, real class act. And I think when you... If you could be in my shoes and go around the league and see the number of people, not just, you know, colleagues and broadcasters, but fans that'll seek me out to make sure that I can get a word to Dave, and, you know, tell me they're all thinking of him and rooting for him, is a perfect measure of the man. So, you know, Craig Ludwig and I are just trying to keep the seat warm and cross our fingers and toes and eyes that a miracle can happen and he can find his way back into the booth again. But for right now, we'll do what we do, and he's got to take care of his own business in upstate New York.
We extend our thoughts and prayers, like I mentioned, to Dave Strader as well, joining the hockey world. Darryl Ray is a Dallas Stars broadcaster. Darryl, really appreciate your time this evening. Hope you enjoy your stay in Winnipeg, and have a good call tomorrow evening as the Jets and the Stars do battle in the rematch.
Good being with you guys. Thanks.
Take care, Darryl. Thanks very much. Darryl Ray, Dallas Stars broadcaster, here. His appearance on the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. When we come back, we look at the impressive starts to the season of the Edmonton Oilers and the Montreal Canadiens.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Everly pushes it ahead. Here is McDavid. McDavid trying to split the defense. McDavid, what a play, what a goal! Oh my, Connor McDavid, welcome back! The Oilers with a 2-1 lead. Spectacular goal. Listen to this crowd.
In this week's Sign of the Apocalypse, the Edmonton Oilers are off to a 5-1-0 start to the 2016-17 regular season here in the NHL. Montreal Canadiens, less so of a sign of the apocalypse. They're 5-0-1. Also, a great start for those two teams. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys are known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or check out their new showroom located at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne, a beautiful spot. Go check them out. Get your jersey personalized. Maybe you got one of those brand new Heritage Classic jerseys. You want to get a name on there, maybe a Solani, maybe a Howerchuk, maybe a Cronin. Check them out. Keener Jerseys, they'll do the work for you.
Drew, I got to tell you, that Sean Cronin reference.
Yeah, well, you know, the Jets have a 44. Yeah.
Number
Josh
44.
Morrissey.
Yeah.
Hopefully that works out. And then there was a number 44 on the ice on Saturday with old Dave Babich. So hopefully that Morrissey is a little bit more like Babich and a little less like Cronin in terms of a career.
Yeah, and when I think of 44, I don't think I can... for some reason, it's always Chris Pronger that I think of.
Sure.
Always 44.
Yeah, but if you're looking at Jets 44s, yeah. I mean, you know, yeah. Sean Cronin was... he was a hell of a
player
to watch.
The Barbarian.
He was the Barbarian. I remember there was an exhibition game. It was in one of those mid-season exhibition games against the touring Russian team. I don't know what year this is. I'd have to look it up.
By the way, Sean, Drew does this often on the show. You'll get to, you know this. He loves to go, you know, down memory lane and talk about growing up in the 50s.
Yes, in the 50s. Exactly right. It was actually an outdoor game. They were skating outdoors because indoor refrigeration hadn't been created yet. But it was a game against, it must have been either late 80s or early 90s. I don't remember. I have to look it up. Against this touring Russian team. And I think in the second intermission, they did a shootout featuring, you know, some of the players on each team. It was very random. The entire game was very random. And the Jets, because people wanted to see Sean Cronin, he'd never really done anything other than be the Barbarian. The Jets sent Sean Cronin out to take one of these breakaway shootouts, and this was before the era of the shootout, so it was a unique viewing experience. I'd have to look up more details about that game.
So what ended up happening? Did he actually shoot, or did he just drop his gloves and then fight the opposing goalie?
He actually fought the puck, is what he did. If I recall correctly, and I think he took a slap shot from, like, the hash marks or something, and I don't remember if he scored or not, but... Now it's an indelible memory I have about Sean Cronin.
It's funny because we were talking about, you know, the Heritage Classic, old Jets, and we were talking about Chris King and Ty Domi being two of the toughest Jets to ever put on the jersey. But Sean Cronin was probably up there as well. And I think since then, I think Anthony Peluso is probably the toughest guy that we've had. But certainly Sean Cronin was one of those fan favorites. And hopefully on Saturday, he was watching that game.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm looking up to see if he had much of a career. He went and played for San Jose for a couple of years after he played for the Jets for three seasons. He had one goal in his NHL career. Pardon me, he had two goals with the Flyers one year. He was lighting it up that season.
Yeah, anyways, Drew, we all have Hockey DB.
I know, exactly. We all do have Hockey DB. Anyways, that's probably enough about Sean Cronin right now. The Habs and the Oilers, two teams off to tremendous starts. How much of this do you think is a mirage? How much of this is a flash in the pan? How much of this is legitimate, that these two teams are legitimate playoff contenders in their respective divisions?
Well, I think certainly for the Edmonton Oilers, who beat the Jets 3-0 on Sunday, this is probably the best start that they could have ever imagined. You know, they started off the season beating Calgary twice, and then before playing Winnipeg, they beat, I believe it was Carolina, 3-2, and... So when you're looking at the Edmonton Oilers and their season ahead of them, I actually did some research for this segment. And when you look at their schedule thus far, they've only played six games. And every single one of their games has been against teams that didn't make the playoffs last year. And I went ahead and I looked at the rest of the season, and specifically November, which is coming up in about a week. And they've got 10 of their next 15 games on the road in November, and 10 of those 15 games are against teams that made the playoffs last year. So you're talking about teams like Washington. They've got the Penguins in there. They've got the Stars. They've got the Rangers, the Ducks. And then towards the end of the month, they've got the Chicago Blackhawks. So certainly a very tough schedule coming up, Drew. But to answer your question, I think it means more for the Montreal Canadiens. And I realize that, guys, the Montreal Canadiens started off last year with a record of 9-0, and then they ended up way out of the playoff picture by the time the season was over. But certainly when you talk about the Oilers, I think I wouldn't get too excited about this start. I think it means more to the Montreal Canadiens also, because Carey Price, even though he had a solid World Cup of Hockey, I think coming off of a season where he didn't play much, a big start means more. And not to say that I don't want to diminish what the Edmonton Oilers have done, Drew, but certainly they've beaten some pretty bad teams. And, you know, with no offense to the Winnipeg Jets or the Calgary Flames, but, you know, they haven't played too many good teams. St. Louis was the one team that I forgot there. That was the team they beat before the Jets. So they have beat one playoff team. Sure. I shouldn't say that. They, out of their six games, they've played one team that made the playoffs last year. So I guess my schedule analysis isn't going too well right now. But needless to say, they've got a much tougher November coming up. And, you know, they've got Washington, of course, tonight as we're on air. So, you know, that's going to be a tough game. So I wouldn't get too excited as far as either team goes, because you don't want to really get, you know, too into records until you get into kind of that late November, early December stage when you've played, you know, 18 or 20 games. But certainly it's nice to see these two Canadian teams be at the top of the standings. But when I look at the Oilers, I still think it's going to be very tough to get into the playoffs when you consider there's a good chance, guys, that five teams get in from the Central, and you got to expect that teams like the Ducks and the Sharks are going to get in from the Pacific Division. So, you know, maybe the Edmonton Oilers keep it up, but I look ahead to that month of November when they've got 10 road games, and it's going to be very tough for them to maintain this.
Yeah, I'll take the other perspective. I'll say it's more significant for the Oilers, respectfully, of course, Ezzy.
Yeah, you don't have to be respectful.
Oh, okay. I like this show. This is fun.
Yeah. No, respect is something that we got rid of a long time ago.
Yeah, you look at the Montreal Canadiens, and I bet you their mentality for, you know, all the misery last year was that, you know, our all-star goaltender wasn't on the ice. He wasn't there to stop as many pucks as he's used to, and as a result, they struggled. Edmonton, on the other hand, how long has Edmonton been saying, we're going to be good? We're going to be good. We're getting there. We're almost there. I know Connor McDavid entering your organization helps a little bit, but just the fact that you can sell a little bit of belief to the fans now, you know, you start 2-3, 1-4. What are the fan base in Edmonton will turn. They will be ravenous before you can even say McDavid. But a 5-1 start, you know, shows a little bit of promise, injects a little bit of belief back into Edmonton. They can start to say, all these first-round picks minus Taylor Hall, you know, things are starting to click and we're starting to see this. I think the addition of Chris Russell, helps the Edmonton goaltending and defense so much. I know he's not the smoothest skater, the best puck mover, and offensively whatever, but just the fact that this guy will block countless shots.
You're infuriating the analytics people right now, Sean.
Yeah, I infuriate everyone.
His analytics actually haven't been bad. They were worse last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go on.
But just saying, I think just it's much more of a significant start for the Oilers, because how long have we been saying the Oilers are going to be good? The Oilers, their first round draft picks will catch up and eventually they'll start to balance themselves out with the rest of the league. You know, who knows what happens 10, 15 games down the road. But right now, I mean, you can sell to the Edmonton fan base that we're making this turnaround.
I think, Sean, you make some good points. Absolutely. And, you know, the Oilers, you don't want to take away what they've done. But certainly when you talk about Chris Russell, Sean, and trading Taylor Hall to get Adam Larson, this defense is better. And Oscar Klefbom was injured last year. So if they're able to have a healthy Oscar Klefbom all year, a guy like Darnell Nurse, who obviously scored a big goal on Sunday against the Jets, this defense is going to be better. So I do think the Oilers are going to be better than they were last year, but I just don't think they're going to be able to sustain this. Mm-hmm. So not to take anything away from them, because they do deserve a lot of praise for their 5-1 start, but I look at that offense and it is going to be top heavy. Connor McDavid might score 100 points this year. I think he will, but certainly the Oilers I don't think can keep this pace up, but we'll see. I mean, it's going to be interesting. The Pacific Division is, I think, a lot more open than it was last year, Drew, especially, you know, with the Kings not having Jonathan Quick in the lineup. They're going to miss him a lot, so we'll see what happens.
We will keep an eye on both the Canadiens and the Oilers throughout the season. When we return, Dallas Stars general manager Jim Neal joins us. It's the season debut of NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
At Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mundell, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Asore with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and news on the Jets opponent tomorrow evening, the Dallas Stars, is available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program the general manager of the Dallas Stars, Jim Neal. Jim, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure, Jim. Always appreciate you making time for us. This is the fourth season as the Stars general manager, the start of your fourth season. Coming off of a Central Division championship for the Stars' first time in a decade, how have the internal expectations changed for this Dallas Stars team at this entering the 2016-17 season?
Well, you know, our goal this year, we got to keep improving. You know, we got to the second round last year, and we want to keep improving every year. It's a tough division. Everybody knows the Central Division is as tough as any division, and I think the main thing is, people maybe don't fully understand this, but just really it is just getting the playoffs and from there everything can happen. I know they hear that lots, but it is true. I really believe the difference between making the playoffs and not making it this year is going to be 3 or 4 wins. I just think the league is so tight. The teams that have been out of the playoffs have all got better, and the top teams haven't gone away. They've stayed the same, and I think it's going to be a very competitive race to the end this year.
Jim, in years past, the Stars organization acquired players like Tyler Seguin, Jason Spezza, and Patrick Sharp. This one was relatively less loud, and you had players like Dan Hamhuis and Yuri Hudler signed. Having already solidified your top forward group in previous off seasons, how did this summer change for you personally as the general manager of a team that was coming off, even though a disappointing second-round defeat, winning the Central Division?
Well, we've had, since I've been there, like you said, you mentioned, started my fourth year, we've had some young kids that are starting to develop in our minor league system. Our farm team won the Calder Cup 3 years ago, and we know that we have a group of young players coming in that it's kind of their time. And we got to make space for them. And then on top of that, you got a cap you got to deal with. As everyone knows, we just signed Jamie Benn to a new 8-year extension that kicks in for next year. So he goes from making $5 million to $9.5 million. So you gotta leave some space open for escalating salaries. And then with our younger players coming in, we wanted to leave some spots open for them because we think their guys are going to end up making us a better team down the road.
Jim, I want to look at the roster, and I hate to bring up injury woes, but as a general manager, I don't want to say is it positive, but is it exciting to you to kind of see this influx of youth in your organization now, and maybe see where some of your prospects sit as with regards to the rest of the league?
Well, it's exciting if we win, I guess, but it's been it's been quite the roller coaster right out. It actually started in the summer, even guys getting ready for the World Cup. We lost Ben, and then we lost Seguin in the World Cup, Hemsky in the World Cup, Fax was hurt in the World Cup a little bit. So, and then our first 2 days of training camp, we lost Janmark, who's done for the year, and then Cody Eakins, who's out for about 8 weeks. So we got hit pretty hard before we even started the season. But, as you mentioned, we got some good young kids coming up, and this is their opportunity. Kind of our message in the dressing room is that, injuries aren't an excuse, and we got to find a way, and it's an opportunity for some of these young guys to step forward.
Jim Neal is our guest on NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. Jim, of course, is the general manager of the Dallas Stars. Jim, one free agent splash you did make this past offseason occurred right on July 1st when you went out and signed Dan Hamhuis, ex of the Vancouver Canucks. You had been linked to him at the trade deadline. Obviously, that deal didn't come to fruition. So why was it important for you to sign a veteran defenseman like Dan Hamhuis right at the start of NHL free agency?
Well, when we ended the season, we had three free agent defensemen, Alex Goligoski, Jason Demers, and Chris Russell. And, in talking to their agents, I knew I wasn't going to be able to sign them. The dollar figures weren't going to add up. It was all those guys' first chance to hit free agency. And I knew that the numbers weren't going to add up for what they wanted to make for their contracts. So we had a very young defense, and I wanted to make sure we still have a veteran presence. And we got Johnny Aduya, and I thought we just probably need one more guy. And Dan Hamus, he's been a great veteran, had a great career, and really kind of fit the mold of the player we're looking for. So we're very fortunate to be able to sign him to a two-year deal.
Jim, I wanted to ask you about Valeri Nichushkin. I've always been very impressed by him, especially when he came into the league with your team 3 years ago, and he decided to not play in the NHL, and he signed a two-year contract in the Continental Hockey League. Were you disappointed with Valeri Nichushkin's decision to sign in the KHL, and in what ways would you like to see his game develop to make him more NHL-ready if he chooses to return to North America and play with the Stars?
I've got a very good relationship with Val and his agent, and we've kind of talked over the summer. And Val, you know, he's only 21 years old and already been over here for 3 years. And he just kind of had a kind of that feeling that he might want to go back home. That he thought he had more to develop yet, and that maybe it was time to do it in Russia. There's some family situations, you know, that kind of were to attract him over there. So we talked, and in the end, I think both parties agreed that, you know, maybe it's best to go back to Russia. And so he decided to head back there. Because of his age, you know, I think it's not the worst thing in the world for him. He's going to play lots. He's going to continue to develop. And we know that when he comes back to North America, that we're going to have a better player as he matures in that.
Jim Nill, our guest on NHL This Week. Jim, of course, the general manager of the Dallas Stars. Jim, those of us in the media and those of us on talk radio who have hours to fill are spending a lot of time discussing the upcoming NHL expansion draft. How much time are you spending, concerning yourself with the expansion draft, and how much a discussion about the expansion draft is coming up in any potential trade talks between yourself and other general managers?
Well, I think every team has sat down, you know, when the season started, you know, once we knew the rules, what they're going to be, and everybody kind of figured out, you know, have a rough idea where their team sits, who they may have to expose, who they may not. Now, it's very preliminary. As we get going during the season, a lot of things can happen. You know, you start, if there's any trades made, if injuries, potential free agent signings can really change things. So I think we're all prepared for it, but as the season goes forward, I know things can change a lot. But like I said, I think every team has sat down and know where they sit. And I think there will be moves made during the season because of expansion draft, you know, especially as we get to the trade deadline. Teams will be making those kind of final moves to do things. So it's going to be an exciting time. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, who's exposed, who's signed, who's not. And I know that Vegas will do a good job, and you know, they'll have a pretty good team because of it.
Jim, Cody Eakin is a player we're quite familiar with here in Winnipeg, you know, given his ties to the city. He doesn't get the headlines or the spotlight of a Sagan, Spezza, or Ben, but obviously he's hurt. But how essential is he for the contributions to the Stars' success? And do you think he's underappreciated throughout the NHL, or at least those who don't follow the Stars as closely as some?
Well, yeah, no, Cody's a very important player for us. He does a lot of the behind-the-scenes things that take place on the ice. He's tenacious. He's a great skater. He's on the puck. You can put him in any situation you want. Lindy's used him many times up with Sagan and Ben, putting Sagan on the wing and Cody at center ice because he's very dependable defensively but can still move the puck well. So he's a big part of our team. You know, when you go to build a team, you know, everybody thinks about the star players, but a lot of times it's those other players that kind of fill in those roles that really are they're the ones that kind of put you over the hump, and he's a big part of our team moving forward.
Jim, your first coaching hire as general manager was Lindy Ruff, of course, and like yourself, he's entering his fourth season with the Dallas Stars. How has Lindy changed as a coach from that first season? How has your relationship with Lindy changed?
Well, we have a great relationship, and you know, I knew Lindy, you know, kind of as a player playing against him, but really didn't know him as a person, and you know, I've told a lot of people, you know, we've made a lot of trades and done a lot of different things over the 3 years that I've been with Dallas, but probably one of the biggest and best moves I made was hiring Lindy Ruff. You know, you need to have the right person kind of directing the ship, driving everything, and Lindy's done a great job. And what's impressed me the most is how he's adapted adapt to the game. You know, a lot of times coaches are set in one way, and this is how they, you know, this is, you know, they got a template how they want teams to play, and it's been that way for 10 years. Lindy's very open. He's every year, every game, he's trying to find, you know, what's the next thing that can make us a better team? How can we get 1% better here, 2% better there? And that's what impressed me is Lindy. He's a great person, you know, off the ice, good family man, and great sense of humor. So we got a great relationship, and he's done a great job for our team.
Jim Nill, Dallas Stars general manager, is our guest on NHL This Week. Jim, the conventional wisdom, at least among the media, you know, the geniuses that we are, quote-unquote, is that the Dallas Stars are going to need to improve their goaltending to make a lengthy playoff run. Last season, the goals against average 3.23 in the playoffs. What is different this year compared to last that will prove the analysts wrong regarding the performance of Antti Niemi and Kari Lehtinen?
Yeah, you know, our two goaltenders took a pretty good beating over the summertime. And, you know, one thing I always kind of mention whenever it was brought up is, you know, we had the second best record in the league. They both won 25 games. And I think there's a lot of teams out there that if they could have that type of situation, they'd be pretty happy. And, you know, unfortunately, probably Kari's last game, you know, a lot of times the thing that sticks in your memory is the last thing you see of something. And you know, Kari had a rough game, his last game. That's when we lost to St. Louis in game 7, but people kind of forget in game 6 he stood in his head to get us to game 7. So it's a tough business that way. But you know what, they both had great summers. They're both you know, they've heard the criticism, and I think they want to prove everybody wrong. And so far this year, they actually been the ones that have kind of won us the games. With all these injuries, they've stepped up their game. They both have played very well. And I think they're going to both have strong seasons. You know, we went into this two-goalie tandem thing last year. I think it was new to them, so they had a lot to learn, too. They're both used to being guys that played 60, 70 games for their team. So it was an adjustment for them. But they know how it works now, and, you know, they're good friends. And I think they push each other, and I think we're going to be the beneficiary of that.
You know, Jim, some hockey fans might not know this, but you patrolled the wings for the Winnipeg Jets for parts of four seasons there in the mid and late 1980s. And I know you were probably pretty busy running the Dallas Stars, but did you have a chance to speak to any of the former Winnipeg Jets or see any highlights of the Heritage Classic this weekend?
Yeah, no, I did. I watched some of the game and watched a lot of the highlights. And, you know, it was great for the city of Winnipeg and the fans. You know, I played back here, and like you said, it's in the mid-80s, we had a very good team back then. It was a good team. Unfortunately, we had the Calgary's and Edmonton's were two of the best teams in the league at that time, and we had to always go through one of them, and then if you won that series, you were meeting the other one. So it's a tough road to go, but it's a great city. My wife and I have great friends still here. Even after I got traded away, we lived here for two more years afterwards just because we love the city. And so it was great to see that that classic they had here and how it was attended, and it's just great for the fans.
Jim Nill is the Dallas Stars general manager. Jim, really appreciate your time and your insight into your organization. Thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL This Week, and best of luck to yourself and the Stars for the remainder of the 2016-17 season.
All right. Thanks, guys. You take care. All the best.
Take care, Jim. All the best to you, too. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. When we come back, we look at the Jets and the Avalanche. They do battle on Friday night in Denver. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Legal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Now stolen by Kozmachuk. Has Lowry with him. In for Lowry. Scores! Adam Lowry and Scott Kozmachuk will get his first NHL point as Lowry has the Jets in front by a score of 3-2.
That from last season, as the Jets and the Avalanche did battle at MTS Center. They will renew hostilities Friday night at the Pepsi Center in Denver. Welcome back to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Sean Assor with you. Big thank you to Jim Neal, Dallas Stars general manager. In case you missed any of that interview, we'll have it available on IllegalCurve.com, or you can subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Get it sent to you each and every week, twice weekly, I guess now, as we start with the season debut of NHL This Week. Jim Neal, always one of the most articulate, most insightful NHL general managers. We've had him on the show previously, and he's very forthcoming with his opinions about his franchise, and we always appreciate him giving his time to join us on the program.
Yeah, absolutely, Drew. Great interview. He was an assistant general manager with the Detroit Red Wings for, I believe it was 15 years. It was certainly more than 10 years. Mm-hmm. So he was a big part of those teams that won Stanley Cups in the late 90s, and, you know, well, they also won a cup there in 2008. So, you know, it was a great interview, and, you know, it was kind of nice to see that, you know, you know, he paid attention a little bit to the Heritage Classic.
Sure.
So, you know, hopefully the Jets get the win, but I think Jim Neal thinks otherwise.
Yeah, I'm sure Jim has got his own rooting interests. I think he would have been fine, I guess, if the Jets had been able to. I think he was happy the Jets alumni won.
Right.
He probably wasn't too disappointed to see a division rival lose to the Edmonton Oilers on this Sunday game. Mm-hmm. And I think he certainly did want to win for his Dallas Stars over the Jets last night. And, of course, the second half of the home-and-home goes tomorrow night at MTS Center. Should make mention that this segment of the show, brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing to Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Still time to head down to Rumors. Showtime in about 40 minutes to see Chris Locke. He's in town all week, so if you don't see him tonight, be sure to catch him this coming weekend at Rumors. And, of course, a great list of comedians. Ariel Spears, a concert series event just announced. You might remember him from Mad TV. So he's coming to Rumors in January. So get your tickets for Ariel Spears. Going to go quick at Rumors Comedy Club. .com. Gentlemen, another division rival, as we mentioned, the Jets and the Avalanche do battle on Friday evening in Denver, second half of a back-to-back for the Jets. This Colorado Avalanche team is sort of flying a little under the radar. They're 3-2 to start the year. Not great, not terrible. But nobody's quite sure what they have there just yet because they have this new head coach. And, of course, he was hired under such strange circumstances with Patrick Waugh sort of throwing that mid-August hissy fit and leaving the organization in a huff when he wasn't able to get his way, quote-unquote. And now Jared Bednar, former head coach of the Lake Erie Monsters, won the Calder Cup with them last season, comes in and is slowly, you know, making his stamp on a Colorado Avalanche team. I think a lot of people don't know what yet to make of the Avs.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Drew. I don't have the Colorado Avalanche as a playoff team, and that has a little bit to do with the fact that they're in the Central Division like the Winnipeg Jets, and I think there are five other teams in front of them that are better. I did pick the Jets to get into the playoffs, but certainly when you talk about teams like Dallas, who we just talked about with Jim Neal and Daryl Ray earlier, and then you bring in the St. Louis's and the Nashville's, I think they have much more firepower. But, you know, what's interesting to me about the Colorado Avalanche, you know, you talked about Jared Bednar, but to me, I don't really know where the Colorado Avalanche are going. And that was before Patrick Waugh decided to leave as head coach. And you're going to see a player who they think very highly of in Mikko Rantanen playing for against the Winnipeg Jets. He's been playing for Lake Erie in the AHL, but he's certainly a guy that they thought was going to be in the lineup to start. And, you know, we should mention, it's a little bit weird. Colorado's actually been off for 5 days. Mm-hmm. They haven't played since the weekend. You don't see that very often earlier in the season. But, you know, the Avalanche have a lot of talent and a lot of young talent, whether it's a Matt Duchene, a Nathan MacKinnon, or a Gabriel Landeskog. And they went out and they made a few acquisitions. Patrick Wierkoch was a defenseman that they acquired. He's actually leading the team in scoring right now after five games.
I don't expect that's going to continue.
There are some parallels between the Avalanche and the Jets, I think. And you have a goalie in Semyon Varlamov, who hasn't really reclaimed his form of a couple of years ago. But you also have a team that I think is still trying to find their identity. And when Jared Bednar took over for Patrick Waugh as head coach. He talked about, you know, wanting to be a much more aggressive team, wanting to be more of a puck possession team, not a team that spent as much time in their own zone. And that was really a problem for the Colorado Avalanche for the previous 2 years. They just couldn't get out of their own end zone. And, you know, you talk about analytics. The analytics community did not like the Colorado Avalanche. And that was when they won the division a couple of years ago, Drew.
Yeah,
so
they said it was smoke and mirrors when they were the division champs 2 seasons ago. Then, of course, they lost in 7 games to the Minnesota Wild in I guess that was 3 seasons ago now, wasn't it? Yeah, the Avs struggled. Yep. They missed the playoffs the last 2 years under Patrick Waugh. Double check that. I've got to double check on that one.
Well, but, and you know, to your point though about the Avalanche here, you know, Semyon Varlamov, his goals against is above .300, save percentage just barely above .900 after 4 games, and you know he hasn't been the goaltender that they've needed him to be, and he signed that big contract a few years back, 2 or 3 years back, so he hasn't been very good. But when I look at this Colorado Avalanche team, I also see players like a Jerome Iginla, who I think is being underutilized. We'll talk to Drew Spivak about that later, but certainly this is a team right now that is still growing as a group. And, you know, they are certainly having trouble scoring goals early in the season here, and they've had a few days off to, you know, work on some things in practice. But, you know, this Avalanche team, I think, is going sideways a little bit. I don't think that they've developed like they should have. And, you know, Jared Bednar is going to come in, and he's going to clean up some of the things that Patrick Waugh wasn't able to improve on. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a lot of youth coming into the lineup, but still, I don't think that defense is good enough. I don't think Varlamov and Pickard are the answer in goal. And I think they're a little bit top-heavy. So I still think that this team is several pieces away from being a playoff team.
Sean, before we let you in, I was correct. The Avalanche missed the playoffs 2 straight years under Patrick Waugh. It was 3 seasons ago that they were the Central Division champions before losing in the first round. So, Sean, your thoughts?
To Minnesota.
To the Minnesota in 7 games.
That was a good series.
It was a good series. A really good series. Of people think the Avalanche could have won, but Matt Cook, if you recall correctly, took out Tyson Barrie early on in that season, or early on in that series.
Classic.
And that really, a classic dirty Matt play Cook. By Matt Cook. That certainly changed the tide of a series that the Avalanche looked like they not in control of, but certainly had a good chance to win.
Didn't Dino Niederreiter score the game series? The series winning goal.
If I recall correctly, it was in overtime.
Yeah.
It was an overtime. Yeah, I think it was Nino Niederreiter.
That doesn't seem like 3 years ago.
It was. It was.
Wow.
I mean, 2 years in a row that the Avalanche have struggled. And the analytics community were able to say na-na-na-na-na because they said all along that the Avalanche were a paper tiger, and they, I guess, proved to be a paper tiger the last couple seasons. Sorry, Sean, go ahead. Your thoughts on the Avs so far this season.
No, I kind of agree with Ezzy. It's just kind of hard to point your finger as to what direction this team is going. They were heavily offensive over the past few years, and now with...
Like they had a good offense, or they were offensive, like they were unappealing to watch?
Well, they were offensive as Jet fans.
Okay.
But, they relied a lot on their offensive players, and Jared Bednar is apparently a very structure-oriented coach, so maybe he'll instill a little bit less wheeling and dealing, less free-for-all, a little bit more stability between all 5 players on the ice. There's one thing we can count on when we see the Avalanche. Matt Duchene is going to score a goal doing that move where he pushes it past the defender, puts his stick over the defender's stick, and just quickly snaps it. We've seen him victimize Byfuglien numerous times with that, so we can always just account that they're going to get one goal based on that. So other than that, my real concern right now is for the Jets, who have been, you know, they've had a hectic week with the Heritage Classic. Now they're playing Dallas in a home-and-home. Then they're flying out to Colorado. The Avalanche are waiting at home on their quiet little mountain town for our Jets. Here's my question. Do you rather be the team that grinds it out for 3-4 games and then travels to play a game, or do you prefer to be the team that sits and waits?
Right, and I think it's a very good point that you make. The Colorado Avalanche haven't had a game in 5 days here. They play a Winnipeg Jets team that they know are playing them in a second game of a back-to-back. So it is dangerous here. You know, you have a back-to-back against 2 Central Division opponents. And this isn't going to be easy for the Jets. They've already found themselves behind the 8-ball here. They've only won 2 of the first 6 games. And you can say, you know, they had a very good performance against the Boston Bruins a week ago. And you can say that there were a lot of positives to build on last night against the Dallas Stars. But the reality is, Drew, they haven't got off to a pretty good start here. And I agree. I think the Colorado Avalanche are a dangerous team, playing them 2 nights from now. So, You know, these are important games. It might be early on, but they're still important.
They're division games, and we know that the division games do matter. They tend to matter more in the standings mm-hmm. than those against non-divisional opponents. Want to make mention of an error in something I said, and thanks to Jim Crampton on Twitter, Aries Spears, not Ariel Spears, is coming to Rumors Comedy Club in January. So I apologize to Aries for that error in my speaking, and to Ariel Spears, whoever you are, I hope you enjoyed the shout-out.
Nice.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Drew Spivak joins us. He covers the Colorado Avalanche. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Twenty-five minutes before the top of the hour. Is there something wrong with the world today?
This is a great song. Love Aerosmith.
Yeah. I was listening to a good interview with, what's the guitarist's name?
Steven Tyler?
Joe Perry.
Joe Perry, thank you. That's I was going to say Joe Perry, and I'm like, no, it's not Joe Perry. I just couldn't remember the Tyler part.
No, he's the singer.
I know.
By the way, we're an hour and a half into the show here, and we're almost half done the chocolate. Yeah,
there you go. And so we're actually displaying willpower is what we are. Anyways, welcome back to the program. This is NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you on in TSN 1290 Studios. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Drew Spivak. Drew covers the Colorado Avalanche for Denver Sports 760. And as much as we always appreciate having Drew on the air, we really appreciate it tonight because Drew is a huge Chicago Cubs fan, and he's joining us in the midst of Game 2 of the World Series with the Cubbies with a 2-0 lead over the Cleveland franchise. Drew, just promise us you're not going to scream out in celebration if the Cubs do something good while you're on air with us.
Yeah, guys, I'll tell you what. I put the TV, I put the DVR on pause so I can just pick up right where I left off during the game there. But, yeah, it's a pleasure for you guys to have me back on again. I always love coming on and talking hockey to you guys.
Yeah, Drew, your boy Jake Arrieta is doing very well so far.
Yeah, finally settling in after a little bit of a shaky first inning, man. You get Jake Arrieta rolling like this, things are going to be looking good for the Cubs if he can place his breaking ball where he has so far tonight.
Do you have about $10,000 to spare to buy a ticket to go catch Game 3 at Wrigley?
I wish, man. It's unreal what these tickets are going for. I mean, I would love to just fly out to Chicago just to go be in Wrigleyville for this weekend if I could afford it. But, man, I saw some of the bars in Chicago were even charging ridiculous cover charges just to go watch the game out there. It's kind of crazy to see just how much this is kind of blown up, especially in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, the Cubs, of course, looking. It's going to be a very interesting World Series regardless. But enough about baseball. We're here to talk hockey and specifically about the Colorado Avalanche. The Jets and the Avs do battle on Friday night in Denver. Pardon me, Drew, as I'm choking here. Jared Bednar, new Avalanche head coach. He gets hired mid-August, sort of out of nowhere, you know, with Patrick Waugh going home just randomly. You know, what are your thoughts? What have your impressions been about Jared Bednar and how he handles a bench thus far in his rookie NHL season?
You know, it's tough to tell so far and get a real good read. I mean, the Avalanche were only played five games so far here, kind of a weird schedule to start out the season. I mean, they were one of the last teams to open up the season, I think 3 or 4 days after everybody else did. And then, you know, they've only played five games so far. Now they're in the midst of their little five-game break. But you know, I think so far the biggest thing I've taken from what he's done so far is just, you know, a different kind of approach. You're seeing them do things differently in the defensive end. They're a little bit tighter. They're not giving up quite as many shot attempts as they were under Patrick Waugh. They played a lot better for the most part defensively in front of Semyon Varlamov. But I think the big thing I've noticed so far is that the pace. They've really picked up the pace. They're doing a much better job getting the puck out of the zone, moving it up into the neutral zone, and creating themselves some offensive opportunities. And so, you know, that's kind of one of the biggest takeaways I've seen from them so far. But it's still hard to tell, you know, exactly how this team is going to shape up to be, because they're still trying to kind of get used to each other, get used to the system. You know, they didn't have some of these guys who were playing in the World Cup during training camp, and so it's still kind of just a lot of figuring things out here. And of course, this break is, you know, probably good for them, at least to get some things in going in practice wise. But you'd like to see them kind of start to perform in game. But I think so far there's a lot of positive signs to take from what Bednar's Avalanche have done so far.
Drew, it looks like there's a good chance that Mikko Rantanen plays Friday night in Denver against the Winnipeg Jets. He suffered an ankle injury during training camp, and he's been unable to play for the Avalanche so far. He got into a few games last year. What are the Avalanche expecting out of Mikko Rantanen, a guy that's been one of their top prospects since they drafted him?
Yeah, I think they're expecting a lot out of him. It looks like he's going to come up and probably play on the second line along with Nathan MacKinnon and Mikhail Grigorenko, if you can kind of read anything to what they've been lining up with in practice as far as their lines go. And so, you know, having him come up and play a top six role for this team, I think just shows what the expectations are. But, you know, I think he's ready for it. I think Patrick Waugh wasn't really ready to put him in that role last year when Rantanen came up. He was playing more of a fourth line. I think he played third line one or two games last year, so he didn't play a lot of minutes in his nine games that he played with the Avalanche last year. But I think they're expecting a lot from him, and I think they should, because it gives the Avalanche more balance. They, you know, this is a team that's really deep down the middle. The center position, they can, you know, roll five, six, seven guys out there, but the wings, that's kind of been one of their weaknesses. So you bring a guy like that up with a lot of talent, a lot of speed, I think he's going to fit perfectly into Bednar's system, and I'm excited to watch him play with Nathan MacKinnon and see how that goes, because Nathan McKinnon's been a guy that's been spectacular to watch so far in the early season here. So I think it's going to give the Avalanche a little more balance and give them a second line to kind of roll with, because so far their top line with Landeskog and previously MacKinnon, now with Duchesne, those were the guys that were kind of carrying the team early on. But it'll give them a little bit more balance here with Rantanen coming up. So I'm excited to see what he does.
Drew, looking at the roster, I noticed Patrick Wierkosz atop the players in scoring. Now, I know it's early, and I'm sure this won't last, but what has his addition meant to the blue line of the club?
He's played well. I think for the most part, he's played really well for this team. You know, he's got, 5 points, I think, this year with Duchesne and MacKinnon early on, and he's doing well, only playing, you know, 15 minutes a night. He hasn't played a ton yet, but I think what he's done, he's playing in the third pairing, mostly with Fedor Tuten. I think he played with Eric Gillen the other night in Florida. But he's done a lot of good things for this team, and they're going to need him. He's a guy that can do you know, play both ends of the ice. You know, you're going to probably get some mistakes with him. He's not a spectacular defenseman, if you will, but I think he's come in and given him what they've wanted so far from him, and that's kind of that two-way type of game. You know, you can count on him to jump up into the play and create things offensively, which is something that Jared Bednar wants. They want their defensemen to be able to contribute offensively, and so I think he's given them exactly what they wanted so far.
Drew Spivak is our guest on NHL This Week. Drew covers the Colorado Avalanche for Denver Sports 760. Drew, Joe Colborne was one of the Avalanche sort of unheralded signings this offseason. The Avs weren't particularly busy. He was coming off a career year in Calgary, sort of a career year that came out of nowhere, you know, had 44 points when his career high previously had been 28 points. Off to a good start already with 3 goals in his first 5 games. Your impressions of Joel Colborne so far as a member of the Avs?
Yeah, I think he's looked really good. You know, the one home game that they played is when he got the hat trick. He had it, I think it was 27 minutes it took for him to get his first career hat trick. And, you know, I think he's a guy that they're going to rely on to be kind of that net front presence. That's what he did in the Dallas game when he registered that hat trick. And, you know, he's a guy that's versatile. He can play both the center position. He can play on the left wing. I haven't seen him quite play on the right wing yet, but he's a guy that you can kind of move around and do some different things with. He can play on the power play. He can play shorthanded. So he's a guy that brings a lot of versatility to this team. And I think he's gotten off to a really good start. But if he can continue to be that guy, to be that net front presence for the Avalanche, I think that's going to be a good thing, and he could have an even better year than he had last year. And I know a lot of people kind of looked around and said, oh, Joe Colborne is the guy that, you know, didn't get brought back to Calgary. What are they bringing him in for? But I don't think a lot of people realize how good of a year he had last year in Calgary while not really playing, you know, top minutes for the Flames last year. So he's been a really good pickup for them. He's a big guy. So, I mean, I'm 6'4", and he towers over me when I stand next to him in the dressing room with his skates on. So he's a big guy and a big body that they can put up in front of the net there. So I think he's been a good addition for this team so far.
You know, Drew, speaking of Calgary, you know, and underrated seasons, I wanted to ask you about Jerome McGinley. He's 39 years old, and he's in the last year of his contract with the Colorado Avalanche. I was talking about it last segment when we were previewing the Jets and Avalanche game on Friday. He's a guy that, you know, people didn't realize he had 19 power play goals last year. He had another 22-goal season. I believe that's his 16th 20-goal season in the NHL. He's had 20 goals in almost every single year that he's played in the NHL. And you look at his minutes, and, you know, if there are power play minutes to be had, he's up around 18 minutes or 19 minutes a game. But under Patrick Waugh, some games, if he wasn't out there on the power play, he was only playing 12 or 13 minutes. Do you think it's safe to say that Jerome Iginla was underutilized by Patrick Waugh? And do you think that he is maybe, there's a chance he's underutilized again?
You know, it's hard to say if he was underutilized. I'm kind of in the camp around here that can see that I think the end is starting to really come for Jerome McGinley. He doesn't have the same ability and the same skill set that he had before. I mean, you know, he's going to be a guy that's going to probably still wind up getting 20-type goals, but he looks slower. He's having a harder time controlling the puck and making plays. Defensively, he's kind of been a little bit of a liability for this team to show. I mean, he's already got 25 penalty minutes this year. He's been taking some really bad penalties for this team so far this year, and I think the problem I think Jared Bednar is having is figuring out where to play him. Is he still a top six guy? Is he a third line type guy? You know, what kind of role do you use him? And you know, you can always use him on the power play. He should be out there on the power play all the time. I know Patrick Waugh wanted to use him a lot on the point last year. Jared Bednar has done a little bit with that so far this year with the game. So you know, you can count on him for power play minutes, but it's those even strength minutes. How do you figure out where he kind of slots in with his team, because his skill set anymore I don't think is quite up to par to be playing, you know, alongside a Matt Duchene or Nathan MacKinnon, guys like that, speedsters that, you know, like to move the puck and get going and get up ice quicker than Jerome McGinley, I think, can at this point. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see, you know, once the Avalanche start getting healthy here with getting Mikko Rantanen back and getting John Mitchell back, and once Blake Como gets back up to full strength again, and kind of see how Bednar starts to utilize McGinley once they start playing more, you know, even strength minutes this season.
Drew, just quickly, did the team expect to lose Ben Smith to Toronto when they placed him on waivers?
I don't think so. No, I think that came as a bit of a surprise, and it kind of stings a little bit because, you know, they brought him in here to be a depth guy, a guy that they can rely on, that they can put out there on the fourth line every single night and play the center position and do some special team stuff, you know, on the penalty kill and things like that. And I don't think they expected to lose him, especially, I think, given the start, because he wasn't very good the first couple games of this year before they put him on waivers. He hadn't performed real well. I think he only had one shot on goal in the four games that he had played. So I think it was a bit of a surprise, and it's a bit of a knock, because it's a team that doesn't really have a ton of depth. You know, once you get past the main core guys, they don't have a ton of depth, and they can't really afford to lose a guy like Ben Smith, because you got a couple guys down in the minors and JT Compher and you know, Rocco Grimaldi and guys like that. But those are guys that aren't really ready to step up and play a bigger role for this team in the future. So I think it definitely caught him by surprise. I think it hurts the team a little bit as well.
Drew Spivak covers the Colorado Avalanche for Denver Sports 760. Drew, really appreciate your time. We'll let you get back to your PVR, and we'll let you get back to the World Series Game 2.
Cubs win. Cubs win.
Absolutely. I love it. Thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure as always.
Our pleasure, Drew. We'll do it again soon. Take care.
All
Drew
right.
Spivak
okay.
of
Bye.
Denver Sports 760. When we come back, we got one final segment on this Wednesday evening. They can't make ice on Long Island. We'll tell you more next on NHL This Week here on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
At least the rest of the regular season with a left knee injury. Remember, he missed the playoffs last year with a knee injury. So that's bad news enough. But also, the issue of ice at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn is becoming a huge issue. It is terrible. The Islanders' players are saying it openly. They're trying to install a new dehumidification system. They're hoping for a short-term solution for these playoffs, but they got to fix this long-term.
That clip was actually from last season. regarding the ice surface at Barclays Center in Brooklyn, which is where the New York Islanders, of course, play their home games since moving from the old Nassau County Coliseum.
You know, speaking of a long time ago, it's actually been 5 years now since we went to Long Island for your bachelor party and saw the Jets play the Islanders.
That would be correct, because it would have been 5 years this month, or November, I believe. It would have been 5 years, because I'll be married for 5 years come April 2017. So, yes, that would be an accurate telling of my bachelor party weekend in the New York metropolitan area.
We saw the Rangers at MSG.
We saw the
saw the Devils in Newark.
But we saw the Jets play all these teams. The Jets played a Thursday, Saturday, Sunday in Long Island, in New Jersey, and on Broadway. And so we piggybacked on that opportunity to make it my bachelor party weekend.
And this is why it's relevant, because the best night of the entire trip, believe it or not, actually wasn't a hockey game, and we saw three, as you just mentioned. It was actually going to Peter Luger's in Brooklyn.
Legendary steakhouse, Peter
Luger's.
I've heard
good things. I've never been, but I've heard it's the best.
It's fantastic. I do recommend it for anybody that happens to check out the that's going to the New York area. Peter Luger's, it's a it's an institution in Brooklyn. It's worth the trip over. Take the bridge, get in the cab. It's well worth it to go to Peter Luger's in Brooklyn. But I should mention that, of course, in Winnipeg, when you're looking for a great place to go, and a great place to watch hockey games, and a great place to watch sports,
go to Keener Jerseys.
No, we already did that. You can't eat food there. You go to Bernstein's Deli, home of the Illegal Curve sandwich.
Oh, Bernstein's, of course. Bernstein's, yes. Shout out to Aaron,
Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. And as I mentioned, 5 big screen TVs, full audio, cold beer on tap, Illegal Curve sandwiches for everybody. Bernstein's Deli, your place to catch the best in the Jets, in hockey, in sports, and in deli, all under one roof.
You could say that Bernstein's Deli is the Peter Luger's of Winnipeg.
I think you could say that. In fact, you could say, actually, that Peter Luger's is the Bernstein's Deli of Brooklyn.
Yep.
It works both ways.
Yeah, it works both ways. Yep. Vice versa.
Vice versa. Anyways, let's get back to the ice surface at Barclays Center, where they are having trouble making ice. Here's a series of six tweets from Chris Botta, who covered the New York Islanders for many years. NHL source, the floor piping system at Barclays Center in Brooklyn does not meet NHL standard requirements for ice making. Barclays has PVC piping. All other NHL rinks have steel pipes.
PVC is plastic.
Yes, PVC cannot maintain ideal temperature of 21 degrees for NHL play. Only solution is to tear up the Barclays Center floor and install proper piping. Not easy, but it should have been done in the offseason. Arena management knows this and hasn't fixed it yet, which is inexcusable, brings down the caliber of play, and is potentially dangerous. Barclays ice will be fine when the weather is freezing, but heaven forbid, that's, you know, tongue-in-cheek, there's a long cup run someday, it'll be a disaster. The new Islanders owners want to fix the ice problem, likely another reason they are looking at other arena deals. Larry Brooks in the New York Post reporting the Islanders are looking at the possibility of building a new arena at City Field, in a parking lot at City Field. Obviously, that would be many years away. Are you surprised? The players have complained. Cal Clutterbuck came out this week and said it's an absolute disaster.
Said it's unplayable.
Unplayable. Matt Molson previously has said that it's an absolute disaster. Are you surprised that the NHLPA isn't making a bigger issue about this unsafe, dangerous ice at Barclays Center?
Well, I think this is a fascinating situation here, Drew, because, you know, as you mentioned, you know, the players are now coming out and saying that this is horrible ice, which is something that you rarely hear, right? But it's fascinating to me because the Islanders just moved into Barclays last year, so this is only their second year, and there are a few problems here. And if you mentioned the Larry Brooks article, the Islanders do not own the arena; they're a tenant in the arena, right? So it is up to the arena to fix this problem. But the belief is that the Islanders might not be there long term, and they might be building their own arena. I believe it was called the Lighthouse or something like
that. There was a whole Lighthouse project for years upon years, and that was always the problem with getting that new arena in Nassau County.
So, you know, the belief was that the arena owners, the arena management staff, might fix this problem in the summer, but now you can't do it. And you mentioned, you know, that the ice temperature is worse in the fall months and the spring months, when of course the temperature outside is warmer. But this is a big problem, guys. you know, you read the article and you see that they've hired a full-time ice technician. They've brought in dehumidifiers. You got to believe that the ice is going to be better as the weather gets colder outside. But, you know, certainly to start the season, it's been a big issue. When you have your own players complaining about it, I mean, that's a serious problem.
Well, to Chris Botta's point, this Islanders team, they won a playoff round last year. What happens if they had won a second playoff round and all of a sudden you're playing playoff games in May and in June where you're not even playing them on ice, you're playing them in some sort of odd slurpy slushy combination that, you know, and trying to make a pass, you know, for a team that's built on speed, a guy like John Tavares is, you know, you don't want to do anything that could possibly hinder his performance or potentially injure him. So, I mean, it goes to show you, we sort of know that the Islanders are the redheaded stepchild in their setup with Barclays Center. But now you're really putting player safety at risk. So I'm surprised this hasn't become more of an issue from the NHLPA perspective.
Yeah, what's interesting to me, though, when you look at this, is that last year their record at home, the Islanders, was 25-14-2. So they have a winning record in the slush dome. But this year, 2-1. So once again, a winning record. But what I think, when I think about this, you know, is it's unsafe. What you really want to do for your home arena to establish the comfort level for your team is consistency. And that's what all the players are saying, is that they don't mind a little bit of humidity and whatever. It's just the inconsistencies that bother them. Because how much of hockey is muscle memory and comfort and confidence in yourself and your abilities? And if you're thinking about the ice conditions or not being able to turn hard enough or stop, it just messes with the whole mentality entering a game. And you can't be doing that. Owners to GMs to officials, everyone involved should be concerned about this.
But, you know, Sean, Drew asked us about what the NHLPA can do, but Islanders owner John Ledecky, what can he do? I mean, he doesn't own the arena. What can the NHLPA do? They can't force the Barclays Center to fix the you know, the steel pipes underneath the arena. This is something that should have been looked after in the summer when the Islanders were not playing. So I honestly don't know what they're going to do. I mean, they've hired an ice technician. They've got dehumidifiers. They obviously have to figure it out quickly.
You certainly will have to figure it out quickly. That show went quickly.
That
That's it
fast.
For 2 hours this
like
week's
that.
NHL this week. Big thanks to Sean Asora for, of course, joining us here on the program. You'll hear more from Sean throughout the season. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. A big thank you to our guests, Dallas Stars General Manager Jim Neal, Stars broadcaster Daryl Ray, and Drew Spivak, who covers the Colorado Avalanche. In case you missed any of that, it'll be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter, at illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. Props to Rory doing his great job behind the board. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.